Hi, I'm Steve Canland, and with my wife Leah, you're about to listen to our Insightful Adventures, a show that chronicles our travels around Australia and the savvy, scientific, and scenic things we experience along the way.
So today is a special episode, and we're sorry that we couldn't release a podcast earlier, but we had some technical difficulties that Steve has mostly worked really hard on behind the scenes to get the podcast up and running again. So this episode pertains to just one specific adventure we had in a ghost town of a contaminated site. So this isn't quite in chronological order, but our next episode will cover the rest of our adventures we had in the Pilbara. So please enjoy this episode of the ghost town of Wittenoom.
So in a minute, we're going to play you an interview. We interviewed one of four residents in this abandoned ghost town. But to give you some context of the interview coming up, we're just going to give you some background and some history. So blue asbestos was first found by Lang Hancock, who, as the story goes, was hunting dingoes in the area and came across a lot of this blue asbestos in 1936, and they started mining shortly thereafter.
Yeah, so this town ended up being contaminated because of this blue asbestos mine. And there are six different types of asbestos, mostly categorized either as white, brown, or blue. And blue asbestos is known as an iron silicate mineral, also known as crocidolite. And blue asbestos is thought to be the most dangerous of all the different kinds of asbestos. We know that all asbestos is carcinogenic, and it can cause lung cancer, mesothelioma, and asbestosis. And because blue asbestos has the thinnest fibers, which are about the diameter of a strand of hair, it can be really easily inhaled, and it gets lodged in the lungs of the victims. Blue asbestos has been mined in South Africa, Bolivia, and Australia. And one victim of asbestosis described having that disease as like having your lungs slowly filled with wet concrete. So definitely not anything that anybody would like to experience.
That sounds so grim.
Yeah. So the reason that asbestos was used or mined so prolifically in the area was that it was thought to be this magic mineral. Asbestos, it's resistant to fire and to acid and to seawater, and you can spin the hair-like fibers into things like fireproof fabrics, and you can mix it with cement to make building materials lighter and stronger. You can insulate things. You could filter things through the fine fibers, and so we know that it's in tons of building materials as well.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact statistic, but at some point asbestos was in a lot of things, and building materials, and it was the brake linings of most cars. It was used to filter beer. It was in gas masks to filter air. It just was used in a lot of things. So this town is called Wittenoom. The mining ceased in 1966, and in 1978, the state government of Western Australia started phasing different phases to shut down the town. So, in 78, they started the phasing down. Between 1986 and 1992, houses and buildings were demolished. The school, nursing post, and police station were all closed, and all other alternative services were moved to the nearby town of Tom Price, which is about 100 to 130 kilometers away, depending on how you go. In December 2006, the government officially, the Australian moved the town's status and turned off the power to the town. In 2007, the town was officially de-gazetted, and the town's name was removed from all official maps and road signs. And finally, after 42 years in 2008, the area was verified an environmental contamination site. So from 66 to 2008, there's 42 years where the government shut down the town and tried to move residents off. But there are a few residents who have stayed because they are the few residents that actually owned the land title to their land. And so the government has not been able to move them on. And we'll talk a little about that in the interview coming up.
Yeah, so in this interview, you're going to hear from one of the four residents that still remain in Wittenoom. His name is Mario, and he's originally from Austria, but he's been living in Australia for the past 27 years in Wittenoom.
Yeah, so the interview, just excuse, there's some background noises and some of the edits are kind of rough. So just kind of excuse some of the rough sounds, but the interview is just awesome and great. So we'll play it for you now.
So Steve and I are here in Wittenoom, Western Australia, which is a, I don't know what to call it. It's not quite a suburb. It used to be a mining town a few decades ago.
Yeah, so we're just here with a couple locals that we just want to talk to, so we'll let them do most of the talking. So can you introduce yourself and say your name?
Yeah, I'm Mario, and I lived in Wittenoom for 27 years. And yeah, I like the lifestyle. And that's it. We like to live here, and that's it.
So can you tell us the history of Wittenoom?
Well, the mine, it used to be asbestos mine, but it closed in 66. And the government been trying to close the town down since the 70s. And because they reckon it's all contaminated with asbestos.
From our perspective, coming over here from the Tom Price Visitor Center, they couldn't even point it out on a map. Well, one, because it doesn't exist on any of the official government maps anymore. They took that off. And two, because they're just not allowed to promote visitors coming here because, from an outsider, you know, this blue asbestos and this, it's all contaminated, and they make it sound like it's this death trap if you come.
Yeah, so what about the lifestyle? What about attracted you to come move here?
Oh, basically nature, you know, like here we got pools out in the gorge you can swim in, and yeah, and it's, you know, very hot in summer, nice winters, it's very good lifestyle. I mean, you live with nature, you know, we got kangaroos running around, dingoes, you live with nature, that's it.
That's fantastic. So the government officially shut off the power in 2006, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
So tell us a little bit how you live out here without any official status or without any official power coming from the grid.
Well, you just had to build your own. I got diesel generators, and yeah, and we got our own water. We get no help from anybody. It's just, you're self-efficient here, that's it.
Yeah, and just looking around here, Mario's home is absolutely beautiful. He's not just surviving, he's thriving. There's this pool that they have that has this, we turned off the water pump for the interview, but there's flowing water into this pool, and he's, you know, has a patch of green lawn over there, and we're surrounded by, there's a nice sound system here, a good new speaker. There's, yeah, a big generator. I mean, this house is a really, really great setup, and he even has holiday visitors come and visit him because it's such a nice place.
Yeah, it is a nice place. So has the government tried to force you out?
Yeah, we just got a letter about 3 months ago, and they want to do compulsory acquisition. They reckon they're in the process of get legislation into place that they can compulsory acquire our properties here. And so far, we haven't heard anymore what's happening with that. So they're changing legislation, and then they have to put it through Parliament.
Wow. So you own the deed to this property, correct?
Yeah, it's all freehold. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here if it wouldn't be freehold.
So because you own the property, the government has to change the law to force you off property that you own.
Yes, and it's never been done in Australia. You know, compulsory acquisition is only for power lines or train lines or streets. But so for contamination, it's never been done. And I believe they want us out of here because of iron ore mining, not because of asbestos.
Oh, so you think that if they get everyone out of here, they can expand their mining of oil and whatever else to here?
Iron and ore.
So not because of it being contaminated, although that may be possible. Is that the main reason they're citing, trying to get you out?
Well, that's what they're saying. They're saying because it's contaminated, they want us out. But I believe it's because of iron ore mining. Very close, just over the hills here, there is a lease which Gina Reinhardt got, and I believe they want to mine that. And there's another railway line plant 6 kilometers from here coming through. And there is, for 5 years, there's another railway line further out, 25 k's out.
Yeah, and I would assume that within Karajini National Park, which is just at your doorstep, but not quite, Wittenoom isn't in Karajini, is that correct?
No, they cut it out.
Yeah, so that would mean that there's some great mining sites that are available to mine just outside of Karajini. That makes sense.
On the topic of asbestos contamination, do you feel this place is contaminated with asbestos? Do you feel that there's a risk of being contaminated with asbestos, lung cancer, etc.?
Well, the town itself is very clean. The problem is up in the gorge, you know, where the mine was. There's still a lot of tailings lie there. They should clean that up.
But they haven't.
They haven't, no. They just pulled buildings down. They haven't cleaned up anything.
Why do you think they haven't cleaned up the mine? I feel like that would be the first priority.
Well, they reckon it costs too much. They reckon it costs $50 million or something to clean it up. But they have to do something about it eventually anyway.
Do you think that if the mining for iron ore would move in, that they would clean that up?
Yeah, I believe they do a cleanup and they get rid of us. They do a bit of a cleanup and then it'd be all right for mining. That's what I believe.
But you're sticking your ground.
Compulsory acquisition.
Compulsory acquisition has never been done in a contamination.
Yeah, in a contaminated area.
You feel like that there's no grounds for them to change the law?
Well, they reckon they're going to do it, but I believe they can't, because they told us that years back as well. They're going to change the law, and it hasn't happened. They just turned our power off and water and everything, and that's it.
So there are two other permanent residents out in Wittenoom, correct? And then a few more.
There's four here all the time and two come and go.
So is your sentiment pretty universal with the other residents here? Does everybody feel the same way that you do?
Yeah, they all want to stay.
Were there other people that have backed off in the past?
Yes, when they turned the power off, anybody who couldn't afford to put their own power in, they left.
Was that the majority of the town, or most of the people had left a few decades earlier anyways?
Well, over the years, you know, more and more people left because they made it as hard as possible to live here. And yeah, so basically they just forced people out. Hmm.
Do you get a lot of visitors to this town?
Yeah, in winter time you get quite a few. They camp out in the gorge. And when it's cooler, in the cooler months.
So when you need to get basic amenities that you can't get here, like the smokes, like the beer, like the other things, yeah, groceries, like the diesel that you use for your generator, where do you have to go?
Well, Tom Price, mainly go shopping to Tom Price, which is 110 k's away. And you have to be organized if you live in a place like this.
I'm
so
sure.
I only go maybe 4 times a year shopping.
Wow.
But then I've got friends who come, you know, people who come, and they always ring up and say, you want anything? And they bring me, you know, like, in winter usually have a veggie garden, grow my own vegetables. And yeah, when friends come, they just ring up if I want anything, and they bring it.
That amazes me. 4 times a year go shopping, and you survive off of that. So do you have a freezer, stuff to keep stuff?
Yeah, I got freezers, and then I shoot as well. I eat some kangaroo.
Oh.
And yeah, you just have to be self-efficient here. That's it.
So the self-efficient lifestyle, I feel like, is quite an accomplishment to be 100% off the grid. How does it feel to be knowing that you are 100% self-sufficient?
Well, it makes you feel good, but it's, you know, like in this environment, like in summer, it's very hot, and it costs you a fair bit to run your own power. And in winter, it's all right. You only run about 10 hours a day.
But in the summer, are you running 24?
Yeah, not when it's, yeah, when it's like 45, 46, around 24 hours. But otherwise, or maybe 20.
What fills your time out here, I guess, is my question.
Well, you know, there's always something to do. If you run your own power and water, there's always something to do. And then you got a garden, and yeah, you spend a fair bit of time in summer watering. If you want it like this, spend a lot of time watering.
Does your water come from rainfall?
Nah,
or do you have a well?
We got bores.
Bores.
Do you ever get a chance to go to the gorge that's close by and have some recreational time?
Yeah, go for a swim nearly every day.
Oh, yeah?
That's it. And when the creek runs, you only have to go a kilometer. You can swim.
Thank you very much for being willing to interview. We just find this fascinating, and I don't know who's really going to listen to this, but thank you for answering questions.
No worries.
You've been very awesome and kind, as all Australians seem to be. I feel like Australians are just some of the greatest people. So thank you,
yeah.
And any last words?
Well, enjoy your traveling.
So that was the interview that we had with Mario in Wittenoom. He had some friends staying with him while we were there, and they shared some other stories with us that didn't make it into the interview, mostly just how this guy lives. So a couple stories that his friend shared with me is, so the nearest town is Tom Price, which is 130-odd kilometers away. And they tell the story where Mario was out and about. I guess he has some banana trees, and he was out there by himself. He fell and dislocated his left shoulder. And here in Australia, the driver's side of the is on the right side of the car. So he had a manual, which usually would mean that you would use your left hand to shift. So he had to drive himself on uncomfortable dirt roads the 100-some-odd kilometers to Tom Price with only his right hand, driving with the right hand, and then reaching over his body to shift, to actually make it to the hospital.
Very hardcore.
So hardcore. And some other stories about his health. The guy just does not like going into town at all. His friend told me that he pulls his own teeth.
Yeah, so there's no dentist for him. If he has a toothache, he'll just take care of it himself.
Just yanks it. Yeah. Were there any other stories that we heard?
There is a quaint little story about a previous resident that was Italian that made some of the best pizzas he's ever had. Is that right?
That's right. And she grew everything. I mean, everyone that lives there just grew everything themselves. But yeah, there used to be this Italian woman that used to live there, grow everything, make everything herself. They would call her up, say they wanted a pizza. They would drive over there. By the time that Joe over there, she would have the pizzas ready for him. And it sounds like in this town, everyone who is still there or who did live there just kind of took care of each other because there was no one else to do it.
Yeah, and as you can, the sense that you get from the interview is that he does love living in Wittenoom. We've, you know, you heard the interview. We asked him several times, and he just reiterated how much he likes the lifestyle. He likes being with nature, and he likes being self-sufficient, and those are the things that you have to look forward to in order to be willing to live in those conditions for, you know, 27 years.
Yeah. But he was very welcoming, and it was just cool to interview and talk to somebody that lives completely 100% off the grid and in a town, a contaminated site that the government doesn't really even want to acknowledge.
And just as interesting as Mario, the resident, was the guests that he had come over. So there was one of his friends that sat in the entire interview but didn't say anything, but he was present at the table while we were talking. And he has come to Wittenoom to vacation for 4 weeks every year for the past 11 years. This is where he comes to experience Australia. All of his vacation time for the whole year is spent in this asbestos-contaminated site. And there were two other people vacationing in addition to that guy. So it's not as...
It's not grim or sad. Or I mean, the town is pretty much destroyed. But this guy has a cool setup and had friends and seemed like he was happy with life.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't want to, like, romanticize, you know, it's just this Eden in this contaminated site, because it is, except for these few houses where people permanently live or live partially, the rest of the town is completely picked over. There's just every single thing that is halfway valuable or useful has been looted years ago. There was a bushfire that tore through half the town, and I forget who was saying it, but they were saying that, like, you would think that the town really wouldn't burn up that much if it was mostly made out of asbestos. But
yeah, I don't remember that. But
but yeah, there's an iconic little gym shop where someone used to still operate a business out of there, but in the bushfire got destroyed. And so, yeah, definitely the sense I got is that it's a rewarding lifestyle, but it's nothing to romanticize too much.
No, it's hard work. And the guy just spends most of his day just trying to keep up with the work around his house.
Mm-hmm. One final thought about the living in a contaminated site and the real risk that there is for having these asbestos tailings get into your lungs and cause disease is that the entire time that we were interviewing
I thought
Mario,
I mentioned this, but go ahead.
he was smoking the entire time, which is fine. It's just impossible to distinguish now if he ever does die of a lung-related disease. We won't know if it's because of the asbestos or because of the smoking.
Yeah, he was smoking liberally. You can hear it in the interview, him puffing out. But yeah, if he ever does die of lung cancer, like Leah said, we'll never know exactly what caused it. Yeah, so it was just a cool little interview talking with him, and we had a great time. So on our last segment of our podcast, we just like to share a short little adventure and an insight. An adventure that didn't make it into our main segment, and just an insight that we learned. And so I'm going to share the adventure. And the adventure is, after the interview, they asked us if we had been swimming in the gorge. And we had just come from Carrigini, which is a national park that is filled with these gorges. And so we told him that. But he's like, no, the gorge close to here. And we told him no. And it was a really hot day. And he's like, oh, no, just come with me. So a couple of his friends, we just followed them up the canyon to this gorge. It was a really pretty gorge, these cliffs and the water. And we just jumped in and swam at the gorge with them for a little bit. And then we got in the car and hit the road. And that was just a cool little adventure after the fact, we just got to cool off.
Yeah, it was great. And of course, the gorge is where the mine is located and where the natural asbestos is found. And they were like, oh no, don't worry about it. Like, if there is any fibers, if they land in the water, then obviously they're not going to be airborne. So it's fine. Yeah, so we didn't see any fibers.
Yeah, and we had saw a sign earlier saying if you do come across asbestos in its natural environment, it's fairly, not that anything's harmless, but it's, asbestos is mostly super dangerous after it's been processed, but not that you should necessarily play in it. But
yeah, that was a sign in Karajini National Park, which is right next to the town of Whitnoom. But when you get into Whitnoom, it doesn't say that at all. It says just driving in this town, you will get cancer and die, so turn around now.
It does say that, but anyways, we had a great time.
Yeah, it was great. And then the insight that I've been thinking a lot about since our visit to Whitnoom is the concept of home. Before we came out on this trip, I made a concerted effort to think of the car that we're living in for the next 3 months as a home. And it's definitely a state of mind that I've had to sort of shift to. And I think about Mario and his home that he set up in Whitnoom. And I haven't really come to any final, Pinterest takeaway quotes about what home means to me. But it is something that I find interesting that people, sometimes your home is, you have to make a really concerted effort to make something a home. Sometimes your home is somewhere you've lived all your life and you have a sense of home. And anyways, I haven't finalized any of my thoughts about it, but I definitely appreciate hearing someone's perspective of making a contaminated ghost town their happy home. And Steve and I are living out of a really cramped car for the next 3 months. And we're doing our best to make a happy home as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that concept. Home is what you make it. That's a cliche statement. But just that, I don't know. You can make a home anywhere. And it just maybe matters to what's important to you to make something a home. But yeah, I don't know. I don't really have a succinct motivational quote either, but.
Yeah, I mean, we were on the road for Christmas. Like literally on Christmas Eve, we were driving to an Airbnb that we stayed in for a few days, and we were doing Christmas family traditions in the car, which made it definitely feel like home.
Yeah. Yeah, and that made it better, and that helped, and it did make it feel like home, even though we were driving.
Yeah. So that's my insight. Just thinking about home.
Yeah, that's a good time to think about home. Anyways, that's our podcast. Hopefully you enjoyed learning about Whitnoom, and we'll keep on track with the podcast. Hopefully we've resolved all our technical issues, and we'll tell you more about the Pilbara region, Karajini, and Broome, and et cetera, et cetera.
And to see photos of all of our adventures, you can find us on Instagram at Insightful Adventures, and that's where we post all of our photos and interesting facts that we learn. So make sure to find us there and keep following our podcasts wherever you find those.
Yep, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.